Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Well, once again, we had some incredible racing, incredible weather too on Saturday. But in Sydney, the master trainer, the Hall of Fame trainer, has done it again. Chris Waller has trained Shinzo to win a Golden Slipper. It completes a Golden Slam for the New Zealand-born trainer. And I'm so happy to say that Chris is joining me on the line. G'day, Chris.
Jimmy, how are you?
I'm very well, Chris, but most people want to know how you are. And how that was on Saturday. Incredible weather conditions, incredible performance from your horse in front of a hugely expectant crowd. How was it for you, Chris?
It was brilliant, yeah. Very satisfying day in being our home track here at Rose Hill, Parramatta. Makes it that little more special as well. As you mentioned, the weather's just been fantastic in Sydney the last few weeks. It's made the preparation a lot easier. I think it's better racing. And, we had a day to remember on Saturday.
Yeah. Tell us the Shinzo story, mate, because it was interesting. Gate one seemed to get better with each run, this preparation. Obviously, coming from Coolmore and the added pressure that comes with that in training for such a big organisation, although you're very used to that at the moment. Did you always believe that Shinzo had a Golden Slipper victory in him?
Oh, you'd try not to think like that. And as you mentioned, we're lucky enough to train quite a few high-profile horses or expensive horses, which is a privilege because starting out, yeah, it's really hard to get your hands on these types of horses. So I guess I'm lucky to be in this position. But you do feel the pressure. You feel it every day, not just race day. There's always disappointments when people pay big money for horses or when people that can't afford a lot of money to buy a horse, even the cheaper horses. You do understand that it means a lot to people. So, yeah, it's a good spot to be in, as I said, but a bit of pressure and you don't go into the race expecting to win. You just go into the race hoping to do well. And he certainly did that from barrier one, yeah, which we made a positive for as soon as it was drawn. Like, he won the week before from a wide barrier, went back to last. We soon saw the statistics. I think that barrier one's won the race like 10 out of 60 times thereabouts. So it's a pretty good stat.
Yeah. You mentioned the pressure of not just race day. So this is a two-part question. What are your coping strategies around that pressure, Chris? And do you still get a thrill out of race day, in particular a day like Golden Slipper Day?
Yeah, I get a huge thrill out of just racing in general. I love Sydney racing 52 weeks of the year. And we get the opportunity to go to a few carnivals in Queensland and Victoria out throughout the year. But coming home is always good. Carnival days or the middle of winter, middle of summer, when there's not so many big races. It's just a great atmosphere and good racing, good jockeys, and working with a good team of staff. So, it's just a very special industry to be in. And as we touched on, lucky to be training these types of horses. And yeah, it's just one thing's gone to another, and we're still getting a huge thrill out of it.
Yeah. I've spoken to you a number of times. I've listened to you a lot. I've read about you a lot, Chris. The completion of the Grand Slam. You had the Melbourne Cup, the Caulfield Cup, the Cox Plate multiple times, and you had the Everest. How important was it to you to complete that? Something that no other trainer has done?
It's something your nose going on in the background, but you block it out. It was the same prior to winning a Melbourne Cup. I used to say, the Melbourne Cup's not the be-all and end-all, the Cox Plate's the big race, but when you win it, your attitude changes pretty quickly. You can see the significance of winning the Melbourne Cup. It does stop the nation, and likewise, since then, the Golden Slipper, everybody's been saying, oh, you can't train two-year-olds, this, that, and the other. I've just been letting it simmer away in the background. We haven't changed anything, and I knew as soon as the right horse came along, we could win it, but I wasn't hoping it would go for too many more years.
I know you're patient, Chris, but hey, we all have our limits, right? I thought it was a really interesting quote from you in the paper, talking just about that, about the two-year-olds and the patience that you take with them. I won't change my training model. And I thought that was interesting from a, and I know you're really open to new ideas inside the industry and outside the industry. What gives you that confidence that you believe you're doing the right thing?
It's just been so good to me, Jimmy, with giving the horses a bit more time. Like, we really struggle to win the big two-year-old races because we don't have many starters to start with.
Yep.
And I just scratch my head at the end of every two-year-old season saying, oh, gee, are we going to be competitive next year? Then they turn three, and then they just seem to jump out of the ground from your Winxes to the Autumn Suns to the Sioux Stars, the Brazen Bows, and horses just so I'm thinking of that sort of showed a little bit of ability at two that I could have really pushed, but gave them time, and then they just surpassed the previous season two-year-olds. So, yeah, it's just been something that's worked so well for us, and like in a big way, it's really worked for us. So it's just so hard to change a system when you could jeopardise what you know works just for the sake of, like, to put it into perspective, like, two-year-old racing is a big deal. It shapes the breeding industry, but I think there's only four good one two-year-old races. So you put all your eggs in one basket, you're focusing towards this two-year-old racing, you might win a Golden Slipper, but if you don't, you mightn't have a horse to get as much out of as a three-year-old year. So it'll be great to be able to find a happy medium, and hopefully we're well on to way of finding it, a happy medium, because that would be perfection to me.
Yeah, and I'd imagine these are very direct and deliberate and open conversations that you have with someone like Coolmore and Tom Magner, who you talked about. Well, you know, their interest is a training operation. Your interest is in a racing operation, and sometimes they don't quite line up.
Yeah, exactly. And look at these colts. Like, they won't be around long. Their value is so high that they get shipped off to the breeding barn very quickly. So it's in my best interest to get as much as I can, as quick as I can out of them. But it's just not in my nature to do so. And, it just seems to work, and I'm happy with it. But, yeah, there's always the question, we paid a lot of money for this horse, and it might be 100,000, it might be 2 million, but people want to know how this horse goes, and you do feel sort of sending them notes saying, oh, he's going really well, but I'm sending him out for a holiday, or, gee, I think you've got a good filly, but she's still a bit weak. We won't run her this carnival. We're going to wait until the spring. Like, it's like you got your Christmas presents, but you can't open them when you tell an owner that the horse goes well, but I just want to sit on it for a bit. It's really hard.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I thought it would have been interesting for you. J-Mac, of course, rides a lot for your yard. And then Ryan Moore is on your mount, and they're coming up to each other in the straight in the slipper. What was going through your mind there? And give us the understanding of how Ryan came to be riding Shinzo.
Well, James was committed to another ride, as they do.
Right.
Like, it's hard for the jockeys. The owners and trainers are wanting them to commit to a horse that's already made the field. So that was the case with James. Shinzo, 8 days ago or 10 days ago, wasn't in the slipper. It wasn't until he won the week before at Rose Hill that he got into the race. By that time, James was already committed. So you then go searching for the most suitable rider. And, of course, most of the jockeys were locked in from Australia. So Ryan, with his connection with Coolmore, and obviously his ability and ability to just adapt to a different racing jurisdiction, because he's doing it every second week, riding a different country. Does that seem logical?
Yeah.
And he is who he is through his ability and achieving big race results. So he seemed a logical choice. So, yeah, what did James say when Roy was looming up to his inside? I don't really know, but I do remember the words said when Hugh Bowman loomed up to James on when James was on Hartnell and Hugh was on Weeks, and it had an F in it. I'm guessing it could have been a word similar.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I can see it slipping between their fingers. Hey, speaking of jockeys, Ben Mellon put something out on social media yesterday. I'm sure you would have seen it. It was talking about the impact on participants, just with how much racing there is and almost the obligation around that. We saw the fall in the slipper, and that was something else that Ben referenced as well. And it sort of goes back to the other question that I ask around coping strategies that you use for the pressure you're under. No one works harder than a trainer, and I don't think any trainer works harder than you, Chris. So give us your thoughts on Ben's thoughts and around those handling pressure.
Yeah, well, fatigue is a risky one when you're working with any machinery or making decisions that which ultimately leads to risks, and that's something you just must avoid. So, yeah, it's a touchy subject because at what stage will occupational health and safety say, gee, if the participants are saying that, we must act upon it. So we have to be a little bit careful in that regard, but I feel like I'm banging my head against the wall with others in the industry. Probably a minority, but the minority seem to have quite a loud voice, because it's crazy that our staff are starting so early, let alone the jockeys. We have, there's more track riders than jockeys in Australia. There's more stable staff than track riders. So, yeah, it's just crazy to be getting up so early because the track's open so early. We want to get our horses out on the track when it's in its pristine condition rather than running the horses and risking injuries. So I'm driven by what time the track opens, and that Rose Hill's 4:45, which is a little bit later than some. But, we need an hour to an hour and a half to prepare for the track opening times to make sure the horses are ready to go and done their adequate warm-ups and health checks, etc. So, yeah, it's silly. And this day and age, there's no reason why we couldn't start at 6 or 6:30 or 7 o'clock in the winter when it's daylight, because a lot of the times I don't even see Winx's and very elegant work. You just see a red light going around on the rider's helmet. I'm expected to make an opinion on, how did that horse work this morning? Well, the red light looked like it was going along. Or was that a truck driving along the back of James Roos Drive? Because that's what it looks like. So it's silly. We've got to work together. We're probably our own worst enemy in terms of track opening times. But I guess jockeys can at least say, well, I don't have to ride at every meeting, and I don't have to go to a night and then a day meeting the next day. But I can see they're feeling pressured, and we just certainly don't want to make them feel that way.
Yeah, yeah, no, it's that's what people say, don't they? Oh, well, just don't ride, and if you don't ride, then the trainer doesn't ring next time. So that's the risk you take. Yeah, not straightforward. I'm in awe, Chris, really, of all trainers because of the work ethic that they have, but in particular, someone like you, with such a huge yard, such a successful yard. Congratulations on the win of Shinzo, and great to spend some time with you today, mate.
Outstanding, Jimmy. Good to talk.